Good morning, everyone. My name is Chad, if I've not met you before, and I'd love to meet you after the service, or if you're watching on from home, please contact me through the website. I'm really appreciative to Steve for that testimony that he played for us through the video. I'm a big fan of Helen Rosevere, and I've read her books and heard her testimonies, and just that phrase that I've heard her repeat other times really kind of helps frame what we're going to be talking about today, the moment that he says to, when God speaks to Helen and says, they're not against you, they're against me. They're not fighting you, they're fighting me, but I live within you and I need a lend of your body. How do we feel when we are mistreated? Well, this story today gives us a way of thinking completely counterculturally. It makes us reframe what being humiliated and being shamed is all about. And I'm so grateful for that little testimony, because sometimes our familiarity with these stories breed a little bit of contempt. We're aware of the story itself and kind of the highlights, but we forget, as Steve mentioned, that there is an emotional and spiritual roller coaster ride that Joseph is going through, and it's one that is similar to what we all go through as believers. And so as we look at our first slide, we were reminded last week, I mentioned to you, that we really can only understand the story of Joseph in the fact that it's being told against the backdrop of what is happening back in the promised land, in the land of Canaan, with Joseph's father and with his brothers. And I mentioned to you that there are these horrible stories that sort of come up before we get to this one. One comes in chapter 34, where Levi, who's going to become the great priestly tribe, along with his brother Simeon, do a revenge attack on the locals there and the Shechemites. And as Jacob says later, you made us a stench in the nostrils of the Canaanites, and they're going to destroy us. And so through this rash behavior, there was this threat that came from without. Then when we get to Genesis 38, we read about Judah, who's going to become the kingly tribe of Israel, of David, and Jesus' line is going to come from him. And he's left his brothers behind. He's intermarried with the Canaanites, and we can see that his behavior and his son's behavior is sinful and evil. And a lot of scholars point out, and I've given some more reflection, and I think we agree that one of the reasons for the strange placement of our sermon last week is that these stories may tell us the reason why God is getting ready to lead Israel from the promised land back into Egypt in the very first place. They help us to understand that there was this great danger, that they're in the promised land, but they're not ready to be in the promised land. And later on, we're going to find out when they finally arrive in Egypt, they're going to be despised as shepherds. They're going to be kept in a completely different place. Eventually, they're going to become slaves. And this is going to kind of throw them into the furnace together. They're going to want to suddenly get out of the world and to be rescued by God. But right now, the Israelites are living in Canaan, and they're more than happy just to be absorbed into the world around them. And perhaps what we're understanding here is why it is that Joseph was sent ahead of them to become a slave in Egypt, and the story that we hear about him, in a sense, is going to become the story of the whole family of Israel. So that's just something for us to reflect on. But as we go back to today's story itself, we begin the roller coaster ride, because we were reminded back when Jono talked to us from Genesis 37 that for better or for worse, Joseph was highly honored by his father Jacob. We're told that he loved Joseph more than any of his other children, and that was going to cause this incredible jealousy. And the symbol of his love and honor was this great technicolor dream coat. I think that's what Jono said. It was officially, we were meant to call it, a very brightly colored chemical dream coat. Yes, so he gives them this amazing coat, and that was a symbol of his honor and status. But then what we're going to be told is that Joseph goes from this high position and wearing this cloak of honor, and he's going to be stripped of his honor, and he's going to be thrown down into a well, we're told, and then he's going to be taken down into Egypt. And in all these sort of literary ways, the writer seems to be trying to help us understand, here's a guy who's gone from a very high and honored position, and he is being taken down to a very low position, stripped of his honor and taken down into Egypt. To me, I think this brings us to what I believe is the really big idea of this whole sermon. And this is a statement that gets repeated in the Old Testament and throughout the New Testament. But it tells us that we are to humble ourselves under God's mighty hand. And in due time, he will lift us up. That we cast our cares upon him, knowing that he cares for us. And this is what we heard Helen Roosevelt talking about. In my moment of greatest humility, God, in a sense, was saying, do you still trust me? Do you still know that I'm there and I have a plan for you? So this story is told in three very clear parts, and we're just going to go through these together. But the first part of it is we need to remember that Joseph was sold as a slave, and he was taken down into Egypt as a slave, where he is meant to live in Potiphar's house. Joseph was taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, brought him from the Ishmaelites. I just want us to reflect on how Joseph got in this position and remember his oldest brother Reuben was ready to just kill him. And then Judah came in with a slightly better idea, but the irony is thick. He said, well, he's our own flesh and blood. Let's sell him. And he said, you know, what do we gain if we kill him? Let's make some money. This is someone who, for pieces of silver, is getting ready to sell off one of the 12 and betray him in this sort of way. It's a hideous thing. And while I know that sometimes we could be tempted to think, well, at least in that way, Judah kind of stepped in and saved him, which is true, let's just keep in mind that for 25 years, as the brothers watched their father grieve, you know, saying, I will go and take this pain with me to the grave, all they had to do is at some stage say, hey, you know what? We sold him down into Egypt. Let's go and look for him. For 25 years, the 11 sat and watched their father suffer. This is not a nice group of people. It is a horrible, horrible thing. And so he's now taken down, and we need to remember that he is a slave. We're told, you know, that he's sold over to a high official. There's someone of very high status. And that man is named Potiphar. But we're also told that in this time, the Lord was with him. And I want us to listen to this first part. Seven times in this chapter, it says explicitly, the Lord was with Joseph. The Lord blessed Joseph. The Lord blessed other people through Joseph. And whenever you hear something repeated seven times and it sounds like a little bit too much, which a point is usually making. For us, we have the idea of 10, the perfect 10. In Hebrew thinking, it was the perfect 7 because God created everything in 6 days and he completed and rested on the 7th. So 7 different times in this chapter and 5 times in this little paragraph, we're told explicitly that the Lord was with him. So reading from verse 2, the Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw the Lord was with him, the Lord gave him success in everything he did. Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. From the time he put him in charge of his household and of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had. both in the house and in the field. And it reminds us a little bit of back in the story of Jacob when he had to run up to Uncle Laban, and Laban was willing to mistreat him and take advantage of him in every way. But whatever Jacob did, whatever flock he was put in charge of, however Laban tried to rearrange his wages, God just kept blessing everything that he did. And this is coming back again, because if we go back to the very beginning of this family, back to Father Abraham in Genesis 12, he says to Abraham, I will bless you, and you will be a blessing, and all people will be blessed through you. And this is happening even for Potiphar, the master of slave Joseph. I also just think we need to point out, as we think back to Genesis 38, do you know in the whole chapter last week, the Lord's name is only mentioned twice? The Lord is only actively mentioned twice, and both times it's him punishing Judah's sons. That's the activity back in Genesis 38. Seven times in this chapter, God is going to come to the forefront, and he is with Joseph, and he is blessing him. So how would you feel about being dishonored in this way and being sent down and even becoming a slave? I think it's worth us talking a little bit about this, and one day we'll do a whole series on the theology of slavery and the Bible and all of that. But most historians will tell us that if you go back into ancient times, there were times in the world where the majority of the people in the world were slaves. And the words slave and servant are used interchangeably. And in fact, the word for slave and servant in the New Testament is exactly the same word. And you know, the only way that you can really tell the difference between a slave and a servant is based on the master. The master that you were handed over to had total control of your life. And you could either be highly honored or you could just be property. If your master thought you were doing a great job, as in the case of Joseph, you could be put in charge of everything. As in the case of Joseph, you could become the most important person in the house, save your master. Or if the master wasn't getting enough work out of you, they could take you around the back of the shed and kill you, and had every right because you were a piece of property, and whatever you do with your animal is totally up to you. And that's the nature of slavery. But it's as if, as we move into the second section, Joseph can look forward into things that Paul would write when he addresses the issue of slavery. And this comes up in Ephesians and in Colossians. And Paul makes this incredible statement. He says, slaves, obey your human master with fear and trembling, and do it with a sincere heart as if you were serving Christ. And then he goes on to make this incredible statement. Because, slaves, you only really have one master, and that is your master and Lord in heaven. And then he goes on to speak to the slave owners, and he says, you masters, don't forget that you too are servants and slaves of the one master in heaven. And I love this one, and I love that one exactly the same. In fact, if you ever want to get a really good read on this, go back and read the book of Philemon, which is just a story where Paul puts his hand around a slave and puts a hand around the master and says, we're all brothers. Let's treat each other in that way. But we can see through the next bit of the story is that Joseph is a guy who's now been put into this very high position, but he is a slave. He is the highest in the household, which means even higher than Potiphar's wife. But now we're going to get into, the next very tricky bit of the story. And whenever a story starts out, now Joseph was a good-looking man, it's not just there incidentally. Let me just read to you from verse 6. Now Joseph was well-built and handsome, and after a while his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, come to bed with me. But he refused. With me in charge, he told her, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he's entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. Last week I said I think we needed to do a compare and contrast, and because these two chapters sit next to each other, we had the case of Judah, who doesn't understand who Tamar is. She just sits by the side of the road with a veil over her face, doesn't want, you know, Judah to hear her voice, and he says, how much? And here we have Joseph, who has this person day after day asking and asking, and yet he refuses to give in despite the temptation. And again, it's as if he could look forward into other words that Paul would write in the New Testament from 2 Timothy 2:22. Flee youthful lusts and pursue righteousness and faith. And one of the things I like about this picture is you can't really tell whether he is fleeing or pursuing. But I love the idea of this because it tells us that fleeing in this case is not defeat. Because to turn your back on one thing and to pursue another just means that you're running in the right direction and not in the wrong one. It's as when Jesus taught us to pray, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. We will turn our back on that which tempts us and leads us down towards darkness and curse and death. And despite what might look good for a moment, we will pursue what we know is right, despite how things look. And so what I want to do now as we look at this story is that there's a lot of symbolism told in the story, and we talked about the symbolism of the stew earlier on with Jacob and Esau, and there is this great symbolism of coats that runs through this. That's why when they redid the play, they called it Joseph's Technicolor Dream Coat, because the coat is a big deal. And so earlier on, we were told that Joseph was given this coat of honor. It was a sense of his status within the family amongst all the brothers. He was the most highly honored and respected. Now we're going to find out that Joseph has been given this cloak. And it's really interesting, in this story, the cloak is mentioned 6 times. Only 6 times. You're going, well, isn't 7 the completion? Well, he's going to get another coat before the story is finished, so don't worry. But 6 times in this kind of almost needless repetition, we keep on hearing about the cloak, the cloak, the cloak. She caught him by the cloak, and she took the cloak in her hand. And when he had left his cloak in her hand and ran out, and then she kept the cloak beside her until the master came home. And then she told the story how he left his cloak behind me, and here it is. And what we're being told is that the honor that Joseph keeps being given by God keeps being stripped away. And again, how do you feel when you are mistreated? And that leads us to the third and last part of the story. And you may have picked up that this story is told like a perfect little plot sandwich. There's going to be Joseph arrives at Potiphar's house, and he's put in charge of everything, and everything he touches is blessed and all of that. Then you're going to hear this story about this incredible mistreatment of him in the middle. And now, once again, just like when he was sold as a slave into Egypt, now that he's thrown down into the dungeon again, he's thrown down into the well, he was taken down into Egypt, now he's thrown down into the dungeon. And yet, the Lord is still with him. While Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. And the warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care, because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him, he prospered him in all that he did.
it's just almost word for word what happened back in Potiphar's house. He's in another dungeon. He's been thrown down again. But guess what? The Lord is still with him. And so we come back to that earlier question. How do you feel when you are dishonored and mistreated and not given the respect that you feel that you deserve, that we deserve? Well, the book of Hebrews, which, by the way, mentions Joseph and speaks about him specifically, along with a whole bunch of the other great heroes of the Bible, puts it this way in Hebrews 12, 1-3. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, including Joseph, let's throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, as if he had this story in mind. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. So consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. You know, one of the things that I believe about the Old Testament is that it gives us all of these stories that foreshadow Christ, but they're very human stories, to help us understand what Jesus really did. Otherwise, he's just this guy that died on the cross for our sins, right? That's all really good. It's not until we put other human beings in the place of Jesus that we suddenly go, hold on a second. When Abraham is asked to sacrifice his son on the mountain, and God asks that of him, and you think, how in the world can you do that? No, that is horrible. It's just that he spared Abraham's son, but God didn't spare his own son. How could any father be asked to sacrifice his son on the holy mountain? And it gives us understanding of another great verse, something that we often talk about and quote, but I want to finish by repackaging this through the story of Joseph. How do you feel when you're mistreated? Well, Paul says, here's a challenge. Have the same attitude in yourself that you saw in Christ Jesus. Because he had the highest position. His father had given him that. No one had greater honor. But instead, Jesus didn't hold on to that high position, but willingly became a slave. Yeah, the term is slave. And was stripped of all of his honor, was left hanging naked on a cross with people gambling for his clothes beneath the cross. The one who had the highest position took on the lowest position. And you know why? Because someone needed to go ahead of the brothers and the rest of the family to prepare the way for the salvation that would be theirs. And if Jesus didn't take that on, then the family would perish. God had given Helen Roosevelt important things to do, but she needed to understand what it means to take up your cross and carry it and follow me. So what we're going to do is, before we move into a time of communion, I want to play a video on the screen of a song that I remember singing back in the old days. It's called The Old Rugged Cross, and some of you will know it and some not. And I had to go to great lengths to find this, and it wasn't so much for the tune. It's 100 years old, this song, and I remember standing next to my grandparents in church and singing it. But the strength of the song are the words. So if you know the song, and as it comes up on the screen, go ahead and feel free, just where you're seated, to sing along. If you don't know it, I had to find a version with the words on the screen. But it basically repackages suffering and humility. Because the song has the audacity to say, I will cherish the old rugged cross. All the trophies, all of the honor, everything that I've ever deserved, I will actually lay down at the feet of the old rugged cross. And I'll actually see this symbol of suffering and shame is the greatest glory that I have because on this cross, my Savior died. And if it was good enough for him, and he says to us, children, brothers and sisters, take up your cross and follow me. It's not to your shame. It's not to our dishonor. It is our greatest glory. We're going to play this song. After the song is finished, we're going to say goodbye to our live streamers, and you guys can do whatever you want at home. But then after the song, we will be sharing in communion together.